Hello and welcome to another episode of I Am The Egg Pod, hosted by me, Chris Shaw. The Egg Pods take a jaunty stroll through Pepperland, discussing the Beatles and solo Beatle albums with a potpourri of delicious guests. In this episode, I'm joined by broadcaster, writer, one half of 7A Records, and massive Beatles fan, Ian Lee.
Oh no, I hate the Beatles, Chris. Oh, no. I'm a Monkees fan. You've got me confused. And you know the rivalry.
Oh, a rivalry
which in the 80s in my house, sorry, I'll let you finish the introduction in a second, it still existed because my sister was a huge Beatles fan, I was a huge Monkees fan. It was like 1967 all over again.
Really?
Yeah.
Did she win over the instruments arguments?
Yeah, she did. But no, I love the Beatles. I always feel sorry for people that don't like the Beatles because there's a huge gap in their lives, you know. And some people go, yeah. Oh, I don't like the Beatles. How can you not like the Beatles? Okay, so you don't like Sgt. Pepper. All right, what about the early rock and roll stuff? Don't like that. All right, there's got to be something somewhere in their canon that you dig.
I think that was more the case in the 60s, wasn't it? Because you had more of a rivalry with your Stones fans and your against the Beatles fans. I think it was the 70s kids that grew up listening to the Red and Blue albums that didn't have that prejudice.
I don't like the Stones.
Do you not?
No, I don't, and I've really worked at it. I've really tried. I might get them. I didn't like Dylan. I hated Dylan for years.
Really?
And then last year, or earlier this year, something clicked, and I found the key into the world of Dylan, and ooh, now I love him. So it might click with the Stones, but I think they're a lousy band. Let's start off with a bit of controversy, shall we?
Absolutely. And you can tweet at I Am The Egg Pod.
So I don't mean to offend. I don't want to be controversial. Peace and love. Peace and love.
So, right, usually at the beginning of these podcasts, I ask the people why they chose a particular album, but you chose a very, well, it wasn't an album, it was an album, a movie, a book, and a computer game.
Yeah, I'm glad you got the computer
which
game in.
Which we'll go into shortly, but you've chosen Paul McCartney's 1984, Give My Regards to Broad Street.
Yes. Yeah, I did. As I was explaining, before we started recording, I am fascinated when pop stars and rock stars make movies, you know. So I'm a big fan of the Monkees, so the kind of cinematic thing for me is always goes hand in hand. But there is something about a pop star going, you know, I'm so good at singing pop songs, I think I could actually act in a whole movie. Obviously the Beatles did it with A Hard Day's Night and Help. They just about got away with it, I think. And it was their charm, and it was the fact that it was four of them. And let's be honest, it was Ringo that kind of carried them through those two movies.
George didn't do bad. I thought I quite liked George.
I think they're all charming in there. Even Help, which kind of doesn't really stand up that well. I really like Help a lot. And it's all four of them come across as really charming, funny guys. But it's the four of them. So to get one of them to go, I'm going to do a movie. So I like it when pop stars do movies. I also like it. My favourite part of any pop or rock career is when it starts to go a bit sour, is when the hits dry up and they get a little bit lost, and they quite often, for a long period of time, don't know what they are anymore.
Yes.
And I think Broad Street for McCartney was the turning point where, you know, after a run of hits with Wings, you know, those huge solo albums of the early 80s, Pipes of Peace and
Tug of War,
you know, huge, big pop hits. Broad Street kind of scuppered him, and he was never the same again. I think Press to Play was the next album. Yeah, there's some good stuff on there.
Yeah.
But it's a man, it's clearly a man adrift who's had the legs knocked out from underneath him. And I would say, not until something like, I mean, you could say Driving Rain. Or, not until, you know, Chaos and Creation, early 2000s. Yeah. So that's like 15, 18 years. he didn't know what he was, didn't know what he was doing. And there are no really consistent albums, I don't think, personally.
Yeah, it's weird how he kind of bounced. So the Beatles split in 70, Wings split in 80.
Yeah.
And his initial reaction after both was to go into his home studio, make McCartney one, and then do the same thing 10 years
later.
And I'm wondering if it's... So back in 70, he did McCartney, and he had to play the small universities and try and build himself back up as a solo artist. 10 years later, he was kind of doing the same thing, but he sort of had the John Lennon's death to sort of bounce on with his first solo album after McCartney, Tug of War. So he was, I'm wondering if he hit his head and think, well, back in 70 it worked, I just did it that way, maybe I'll do it again as my new solo career.
Mm.
And I'm wondering, then he had a number one single with Pipes Peace and Tug of War and Pipe, brilliant albums. I'm wondering if he was kind of thinking, I can do anything. I'll do a
film. Suspect he felt untouchable and that he was invincible. And it's kind of, you know, so many artists have done it. You know, Paul Simon and One Trick Pony, and that was a bit later. Bowie was doing, in inverted commas, acting. It seemed to be the inevitable thing because it's, you know, I was... 84, I was 10 and 11. And I wasn't really into pop music at that age, but he was huge. The early 80s, you know, Ebony and Ivory, which I think is a great song, and I know people knock it. I think it's a brilliant song. Yeah. Ebony and Ivory, Pipes of Peace, those were massive hits, the Michael Jackson songs. He was huge, you know, he was huge. And you're right, with Lennon gone... that kind of focus, the sort of interest on him that he perhaps never had as a solo artist before. And I think he felt he could do anything. There's a great, it's well worth watching. There's a South Bank show, which is on YouTube.
Night.
Isn't it great?
Yeah.
Interview with, and I'm kind of jumping ahead a bit, but about Give My Regards to Broad Street. And it's fascinating, him talking about re-recording the Beatles. I'm jumping ahead a little bit. Go on.
No, go for it.
Well, seriously. It's okay, fine. It's just really interesting him kind of being very humble, but going, well, you know, kind of basically saying this is the next thing and it's probably going to be a hit. And you see him in the studio with George Martin. Everything about it should have been a hit. And the album was successful. It's got a bona fide classic in No More Lonely Nights, the ballad version. One of the greatest McCartney songs of all time. Here's something about McCartney. And I'm a big defender of his. But in his concerts from kind of the 90s onwards, never really touched this period.
No.
Never. I loved it as a kid, Spies Like Us, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great knockabout song.
Yeah.
But he never, you know, he's never touches Spies Like Us or No More Lonely Nights or... Puppy Dog Tales and The House of Do you not like that? What's it? He's on the cliff the day after the hurricane playing the guitar.
Once upon a long.
Those were huge hits.
Yes.
Never touches any of that stuff.
Yeah.
I would love to go and see McCartney do, you know, his one from the 80s, you might remember, is Pipes of Peace. You know, I'd love that, but just ignores it.
Has he ever played Pipes of Peace? I'm not sure.
Strange, isn't it, that he overlooks the 80s?
I think Here Today he does. That's more of a kind of perennial Lennon song, but
that's
I can't
it.
Think of any... Yeah, strange,
isn't it? It is strange. Anyway, sorry, I can't remember how we got there, but that's where we got to.
That's where we were. Doesn't matter.
It's going to be one of those episodes today, kids. I hope that's all right with you. I've got a bit of a headache and I'm rambling, so apologies.
Sounds good to me. So the film, 5th of November 1983, filming commenced at Elstree Studios, and they had a budget of $1.5 million.
His own money, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Yeah. And it was produced by, if I can pronounce this, Andros Epaminondas, who'd previously worked with Kubrick on Clockwork Orange
in collaboration,
and
I think, with, dare we say his name, Harvey Weinstein as well.
Ooh,
Weinstein's grubby paws.
Ooh.
We're on this. My favourite bit of trivia is it was the directing debut of Peter Webb. It was also the last film that Peter Webb ever directed.
Right.
So, and from what I can gather, it was supposed to be like an hour-long TV special, like, you know, the James Paul McCartney kind of special.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be that. And I think it was Weinstein If we get these facts wrong, guys, please tweet us, you know, and let me know. I think it was Weinstein who came in and said, I can get you back in for a movie for this. I can turn this into a movie. This should be a movie. And that's why there are those very long, tedious kind of fantasy sketches. The Eleanor Rigby Victorian dross that's unwatchable more than once. These extended musical fantasies, because suddenly you're turning a 60-minute script into a 90-minute movie. Yeah. But it seems there was no extra script written. Written by McCartney, yeah. Starring McCartney.
Theme tune
by McCartney. I respect him for doing it. I didn't see it when it came out. I remember it coming out. I would have been about 11. And it was the first time... I remember it getting terrible reviews. Mm. I remember seeing it on Film 84 and it just getting terrible reviews. And it was the first time as a young person I'd registered, oh, huge stars can F things up and they can get it wrong. Yeah. And people can turn against them. And I just remember as a kid thinking, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Really interesting. Because it was everywhere. I remember adverts for it on the telly. Yeah. I remember trails for it, posters. Okay, right. So people can turn against you.
Yes.
So I found that fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I'm just double checking.
Are we definitely? Have you pressed record?
raise. Oh, shit. Oh, well.
This is a great rehearsal. Start we'll go again. For it in an hour, yes.
Could be a long one. So the cast, I mean, he did pretty well. We had Brian Brown, Ralph Richardson.
I think Ralph Richardson's last movie as well, I think
it was, yeah.
What a way to go. What a postscript to a career.
Absolutely. But also, again, going back to what you were saying about Weinstein, if Paul was planning to do that as a TV special like the McCartney show he did back in 73, I think it was, that would have, again, been a parallel of what he was doing after the Beatles split, after Wings split. So he would have thinking, you know, I'd do another
cycle.
TV special. So and it's Weinstein's fault.
It would have been a great little TV special.
Yeah.
You know, with some of the... You cut out the fantasy, you cut out a lot of the bad acting, but have some of it. And because, here's the thing, most of the musical performances in this film are great. Genuinely, I think they're great. And as a collection of videos, it's superb. The silly love songs to one side. I've got no idea what's going on with the Flock of Seagulls.
Yeah.
MTV vibe. That's embarrassing. Yeah. But... ballroom dancing? That section's incredible. Mm. Where he's directing it and then he steps into it. And also, for me, this was an introduction to... I'd never heard a lot of these songs before. Wanderlust. I'd missed out on Wanderlust. I think the version of Wanderlust on here is better than the original. Mm. That sequence is great. The ballroom dancing is great. The I'm Not Such a Bad Boy. That's a great little session, you know, and if that was in a 50-minute, 60-minute TV special, I think it would be a wonderful bootleg that would have been passed around. Have you seen this? It's the ridiculous storyline. It's...
ridiculous, I would say weak at best. It's not the strongest plot.
Wafer thin. Well, the storyline is, we should say, for those who haven't seen it, so he's recorded a new album. The master tapes have gone missing. He's got 24 hours to find the tapes. Otherwise, he gets his ass owned by like an American conglomerate or something.
Yeah.
They end up owning Paul McCartney. So there was a guy working for him who had been an ex-con. And
Harry.
You know, Harry.
This is Harry.
You know, I just wanted to give him a chance. You know, I think everyone should have a second chance, you know.
Yeah.
And
no, Paul. No, he's a bad un.
No, he's great, you know. So the story is, has Harry stolen this tape?
Yes, has he?
The end of the film. Let's jump to the ending. The end of the film is...
Right, spoiler alert, if anybody does want to watch this, but spoiler alert.
End of the
alert.
Film is... he finds Harry locked in the toilets of Broad Street Station, right? And he's not. Yeah. He fell asleep and he got locked in, right? So the tapes haven't gone missing. So that's a really weak ending. Yeah. But then to compound it, there's another weak ending in that actually it was all a dream anyway. It was all a dream anyway. I remember being 10 and writing a story and the ending was, and they woke up and it was all a dream and getting told off.
Yes.
For that. And this is the problem with it. This is the problem with it. Because he was such a huge star, because he was a Beatle, and I've heard, and this is partly why I've heard Press to Play was such a weak album. No one had the guts to tell him no. And those that did tell, there's a great story. I can't remember the name of, there were two producers for Press to Play. And
oh, Hugh Padgham.
Yeah, I think it was Padgham.
Yeah.
And McCartney presented a song, and Hugh went, well, I don't think it's one of your best. And McCartney turns to him and says something along the lines of, how many fucking number ones have you had? And that kind of silenced him. And, all right,
it's
yeah,
great.
You're right.
I love it.
And I'd imagine it would be the same with this. Either everyone was too afraid to say, that dream, the whole thing being a dream, Paul, I don't know. Or if they did, he would turn on them. Yeah. I'd imagine, you know. So, weak plot.
Yeah, and again, going back to the ending, the one thing that we do miss out as well is the reason that Harry went in the room was because he needed a shit. So basically the whole film and all this... I love Harry, you know, he's a great guy underneath that con man exterior, but the whole film is based around a bloke needing a shit. And it was a dream anyway.
That's
so Paul McCartney dreamt about a man having a dump.
Should have been more explicit than that, because that's not a bad premise. But going back to the musical performances, I think they're great performances. I dig the remake of Good Day Sunshine. It's one of my favourite Beatles songs. And I kind of dig it. I was listening to the album today. I think it's a fun... It's pointless. The covers are pointless. The remakes are pointless. I do think it's a superior... I'm going to get slaughtered for this.
Go on.
I'm not saying this to be controversial. I genuinely think it. I think it's a superior version of Yesterday. I don't really like Yesterday. Maybe it's because I've heard it so many times. It's got a brass band on it. I think it works better.
Well, we had a conversation about the White Album recently, and David Quantick, and he was saying about Mother Nature's Son.
Yeah.
And the brass on that, and he said that opened up a whole new era, and it just brings in this sort of melancholy...
Yeah.
And, you know, we're northern lads at heart and this kind of thing.
Exactly. I'm trying to think, what was the brass band that he produced and used quite often? I think there's one of them in this... The North Mills...
Oh, the Black Mills Dyke Band or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that one of them is responsible
Black
for
Dyke
this.
Mills Band.
And he used them, you know, he produced some stuff for them, but he would also bring them in. I'm a sucker for a brass band. So the brass on that, on Yesterday, I think is lovely. I think it makes it very more melancholy and less... Yesterday, there's something about it that I find a little bit cynical, the original. This is great. There is... the version of Long and Winding Road is...
interesting.
Would that be anyone's go-to
I
version?
Don't know. Again, the film...
the saxophone.
The film I've picked up as well. I know. There's a character, Mr. William Rath, from Rathbone Industries.
Yeah.
Who is basically Alan Klein in the film. He's this
nasty
man. And, again, spoiler alert... You know, he's a nasty man and Paul wins and everything's great. But the fact that Long and Winding Road is right at the end of the album, it's almost like he's put it there saying, up yours, Alan Klein, I'm going to redo it my way.
Well,
however, then he makes it just as slushy and that awful.
As the Phil Spector version.
Yeah.
It's that thing of I'm going to do it my way, but I'm going to base it on the Phil Spector version.
And add an 80s sax solo.
Oh. Which is very, very weird. I'm just looking at something because... Sorry, I'm fingering your vinyl. It's a beautiful package.
It's 12 inches.
Now, that's interesting, because I had read... These songs are listed as Lennon-McCartney. Online, it says that the songs are listed as McCartney-Lennon.
Yes.
I wonder if that's in the movie. If that's the movie credits, it's McCartney-Lennon.
I don't know if that's the original vinyl.
Yeah.
So maybe subsequent pressings could have changed that. He did like to...
It's a beautiful package. I mean... How cool does Ringo look? That picture of Ringo with Barbara and Linda. How cool does he look there? And I love Ringo. I find Ringo fascinating. I'm guessing 83, 84. This was when he was heavy boozing. He hadn't sobered up by then, had he?
Yeah, because there's an interview on Michael Asper with him and George, which was after this, and he was
it's horrible,
a bit
that,
merry.
It's horrible, so. That. They're all smoking away.
So,
I love Ringo, and I respect him for getting sober, and I even enjoy Caveman. That's how much of a Ringo fan I am.
Oh, wow.
But he... Oh, wow, yeah. But he...
Big fan.
Very interestingly, refused to re-record the Beatles tracks.
That's right,
He said he didn't want to do it, and I thought that was... Even he recognised that was probably a bit of a mistake. Mm.
Yeah.
To do those.
And there's four songs from Revolver. So
yeah,
from
all of
the songs he could have picked.
You're absolutely right. For No One, Here, There and Everywhere. Eleanor
Rigby, yeah.
Is that really, is Revolver, isn't it?
And
Good Day Sunshine, of course.
Good Day Sunshine,
of course. That's odd, isn't it?
And it's primarily a Lennon album. My friend Rob Manuel, who was on one of the other podcasts,
yeah,
we were chatting about this yesterday. Basically, we spent most of the day DMing each other about this album. And
I'm really sorry if I brought up painful memories for you by making you watch the movie. Had you seen it before, the movie?
I had seen it many years ago, but it was it was interesting.
Yeah.
I think just for the ending, it was worth it. But he was saying that Paul McCartney, in sort of 83, 84, because you obviously had VH1 and MTV coming out, so there weren't really that many videos for those. I mean, they did the promo clips for the singles, but sort of album tracks. I think he was talking at the time about it'd be nice to do a promo video just so we've got one out there to put on MTV. So maybe that's where the idea sprung from.
Well, they would also, at the time, in the background, bubbling away, was the Long and Winding Road movie.
Which was, yes.
That was. Yeah. I think that was started probably about when they split up. Yeah, it was like 70, well. 71. So that was constantly bubbling away. So, yeah, that actually is quite a good point. But I think Ringo's great in this. You know, there's I think he's funny, he's charming, he's Ringo. And that's what you're going to get in a Ringo Starr acting performance, and I love it. And I do wonder if George was approached.
George Harrison warned Paul, don't do it.
Did he?
Not don't do it, but don't do it on your own. Get a proper production. You know, right. Get people who know what they're doing. No, I'll be fine.
Oh, because of course, George was doing movies, well into movies at that point.
Yeah, it was the... I'll cut all this out.
no, keep it in. Us from old men struggling to remember basic facts. That's what this should be. Come on.
The film with Michael Palin.
The Missionary. The
Missionary, right. Yeah. I think that came out pretty well the same time as this as well. So
Handmaid was in it. It's like its heyday, you know, its peak then before the downward turn.
Yeah.
And the ripping off of everybody.
I know which one I'd rather watch.
Yeah. Oh, I do know. I've never seen The Missionary. Is it any good?
It's fantastic.
Is it good?
Yeah,
I might do that this afternoon. Yeah. But you do kind of think, wouldn't it have been lovely if George had popped up in it?
Yeah. I don't know what their relationship... Well, it wasn't too bad. Cause
I think it was all right then.
Yeah, they went to Ringo's wedding, didn't they?
But I didn't see the film when it came out. And I remember at college, so this would have been about 92, 93. I'd never seen it. And I'd seen a copy of it on Betamax for 50 quid.
Whoa.
And I was thinking, But I ended up splashing out, I think it was about 25 quid on VHS for a copy of it, because I really wanted to see it. And it was exactly what... It was more boring than I thought it was going to be. There are long periods of tedium. That, again, that Victorian fantasy thing with the sideburns and... Jeez. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it because there are some brilliant bits in it. The musical performances, like I said. I enjoyed it because there is some weirdness in it. I enjoyed it because Paul McCartney's stab at acting. Yeah. Fair play. He has a go. And also,
stab is a good word.
Is that bit, there's just some wonderful scenes in it where he's trying to act and it's awful. His acting is awful. There's no, but I think he looks really cool in it. You know, he's got a cool haircut. He's not got the mullet. He's kind of that crossing that line from sort of young McCartney to old McCartney. It's just straddling that point. I think he looks brilliant in it. And you just think, man, if someone had took you to one side, given you a slap and said, right, we can do this, but let me write the script. Let's get an experienced director in. Let's maybe pull back a little bit of the acting from you.
I wonder if he did learn from that. Because as you say, after this, the hits dried up. You know, there was nothing. And then a few years later, he worked with Costello. And all the interviews he was doing at the time were saying, I love working. He's just like Lennon. He tells me to shut up. And no, you can't use that.
But then... He ditched all the Costello songs.
Yeah.
And I kind of missed out on the Flowers in the... I didn't know the full story of Flowers in the... I remember it coming out. I remember seeing a big display in Our Price. I remember all the interviews. This is a collaboration between McCartney and Costello and the Lennon things. Not since Lennon have I... You know, he brings that kind of gritty negativity that Lennon would bring. You know, getting better all the time. It couldn't get much worse. That kind of antithesis. But I didn't really listen to it. I loved My Brave Face. I still love My Brave Face. Another song he overlooks in concert, which I would love for him to bring back in. And Put It There, I think, is a great song. And Figure of Eight, I quite like. But I never bought the album. I didn't hear Flowers in the Dirt until about 3 or 4 years ago. And I listened to it. I was thinking, what the fuck? This is not... Sorry, I was swearing. This is not the album I was led to believe. And you look at the songwriting, there's only a few Costello songs. Horrible 89, 90 production. Horrible. And some awful songs on there. And it was only listening to another podcast and doing some, the Take It Away guys, who I think are brilliant, and doing some reading about it, that, and then listening to the bootlegs.
Yes.
He bottled it.
Yeah.
He bottled it. It really feels like he was going one direction. If he'd have done that, you listen to the McCartney Costello demos.
They are awesome.
They're incredible. Fantastic. I only heard those about 4 or 5 months ago. They're incredible. What an album. What a bold album that would have been. That might not have sold as much as Flowers in the Dirt, but would have been, you know, 30 years later, would have stood the test of time a whole lot better. That gritty, you know, thoughtful, the lyrical wordplay. Mm. And instead he does Où est le soleil, and, you know, that rubbish. Bottled it, I think.
He lies in powder and perfume. The pretty clothes are scattered round the room, and it's so like candy. Here lies the lipstick and the face, the color tablets keeping it all in place, and it's so like candy. Like candy.
And I think that it's partly down to Broad Street and Press to Play. That thing of unstoppable. Oh, that didn't go the way I planned. That was a flop.
Yeah.
And from then on, for the next 15, 20 years, it feels to me, with exceptions, that he's trying to second guess the market. What do people want from a Paul McCartney album? Brilliant songs in that period. There are some gems in there, but there's no consistent album, I don't think, until Chaos and Creation.
Flaming Pie, which kind of came on the edge from the other side of all the anthology releases.
Yeah.
And there was suddenly that big interest. Oh, it's Paul's first solo album after the Beatles anthology. I think he found himself, he went back to that kind of straight 60s songwriting process, cut out a lot of all the 80s production that he'd been relying on.
I wish he'd cut out some of the songs on Flaming Pie, though, because it's too long. Isn't that the one that...
It's like a
CD length. It's like, it's like 65 minutes or something.
Yeah.
Excuse me, fact fans, if I got that wrong.
Oh, don't come here for facts.
Okay, good, because I know that... I've just been arguing with people on a Monkeys Facebook page because I'm slightly dubious about the new Christmas album.
What are your thoughts on that? Because I've heard one of the tracks.
Andy Partridge has written a great song on there. Unwrap You for Christmas. And I loved Good Times, which I thought was just wonderful. Oh, and I would like that. That should have been there. If that had been the full stop, that would have been great. I don't like the Christmas album.
Yeah.
I think it's weak. There are reasons for it. Peter's not very well. I think Mike recorded at least one of his vocals shortly, after having heart bypass, quadruple heart bypass. Yeah. Mickey sounds as great as ever. You know, one of the greatest white soul voices of all time.
Yeah.
But I think the production's thin. I think the song choices are weak. And I'm kind of disappointed by it.
Hmm. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how it sells. Again, you're talking about CDs and Flaming Pie being so too long.
Yeah.
This is another thing. As I say, I bought the vinyl when it came out.
It's a beautiful package. It's a lovely gatefold. Is this your original?
Yeah.
This is in good nick, man.
Oh, mate,
you've looked after this.
They were precious.
Does it have a plastic sleeve that it lives
in? It does, I've taken it out just for you.
Well done, thank you.
With your bare hands.
I appreciate it.
But I remember, because, again, talking about geeky, I used to get the Beatles Monthly magazines.
Oh, wow.
Five things. Oh,
yeah.
Fantastic. And there was always excitement when there was a new Macca album coming out. And they had a little letters page. It's basically like Twitter from 40, 30 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people complaining that the vinyl version, there was about two songs missing from it, from the CD version. Because not everybody... I didn't have a CD for another 5 years after this album came out.
But that was the trick. I would never have complained about that, because that was the trick in the mid-80s, was you'd get a bonus track or two on the CD, either because it wouldn't fit on the vinyl or to encourage you to buy... both of them. That's a trick I still do with 7A Records. You know, my record label is, except we do it the other way around. We put a bonus track on the vinyl so that, you know. But that was, people were complaining about that, were they, in Beatles Monthly?
Yeah.
God bless them.
you know what Twitter's like.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine working for a Beatles magazine.
Yeah. I wanted to get, because I never got Beatles Monthly, I just got a full set of Monkees Monthlies recently on eBay. Full set, guys. But wow. I was looking at Beatles Monthlies. They're quite expensive on there. I'd love...
They are. Well, I've got some for sale.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Let's chat. Let's just chat dollars.
Let's chat.
I can wait another day until I call you. You've only got my heart on a string and everything a flutter.
So briefly going through the song. So starts No More Lonely Nights, the ballad version, thankfully.
Stunning. One of the best McCartney songs of all time. Classic, you know, classic McCartney, a piano-led, mournful, heartfelt ballad that's as catchy as hell. You know, it's great. Great lyric. We know that sometimes McCartney can come up with a great melody and not focus as much attention on the words. In this, the whole package is... superb. And a big hit. Again?
Absolutely.
Again,
yeah.
A big hit in the UK, not such a big hit in the States, I think. Mm. But just classic McCartney.
Yeah, Dave Gilmour's solo at the end.
Yeah.
Always reminds me of Another Brick in the Wall, solo at the end of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Changes off into the coda.
Yeah.
Goes off and veers off.
A lovely, lovely song. And I think that song is what sold the album and probably encouraged the audience, the small audience, to go and see the movie.
Yeah. Because the album itself, it's only got, apart from that, which everybody had heard, it's only got two new songs on it. And the rest of it's kind of like a greatest hits package. Again, around this time you had all the Now That's What I Call Music albums were coming out. Yeah. So maybe he was thinking, rather than do a compilation, just do this.
Yeah.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine.
Good Day Sunshine, which he's playing on the first one on Revolver.
I remember really, really liking it, and then I listened to it this morning and it felt limp.
Yeah.
Because Good Day Sunshine is one of my favourite Beatles tracks. You know, it's one of the reasons a lot of people hate McCartney. You know, it's that upbeat. I love it. I think it's a brilliant song. I think it's quite a fun section in the film, isn't it? It's him driving a kind of... fake sports car round the streets like a lunatic, which is what the video game is based on.
Played that?
Of course I've played it. Of course I've played it.
Did you understand it?
No, of course I didn't. It's set after the film, and the lead single is still missing, so you've got to drive around.
Harry got diarrhea then.
You have to drive around London. If I remember, there was that, and there was the Ghostbusters game that involved driving around a grid. And it plays, doesn't it play an awful version of Band on the Run?
Yeah.
Insert that into this bit here so people can hear how annoying.
Yeah. And the sound of the cars, like this.
Yeah. I think it was on the Commodore 64. Painful. I think it may have been on the Spectrum
as well. It was.
I remember playing it at the time, and, you know, how weird. But
yeah.
but also it made sense. That was, you know, computer games were the big thing at the time. Mm. So it made sense to have this, what we'd probably call it 5 years ago, 360, this complete multimedia package of album, movie, game. I think there was a book as well. I've got a feeling there was a book.
Yeah.
So he covered everything, which not many people were doing at that point. You know, he saw the potential in covering every corner of the market.
You don't think Harry would go and do a stupid thing like that, do you?
Yes, I do.
Next one's called Corridor Music, which is basically just him and Ringo talking about Harry. What was it? Yeah, it's basically a plot device that says, and Paul says, you don't think Harry would go and do something stupid like that? And Ringo, yes, I do. I bloody do. And Again, Rob Manuel, we were chatting. I wonder if the reason it's on the album is there's a lot of Lennon McCartney tracks on there, but this puts another McCartney track on there.
Yeah, you know, that's distinctly possible, isn't it? But it's nice hearing Ringo. I love hearing Ringo and Paul talking.
Yeah.
There's a great... And also, I love it. I wish Ringo had sung more. I don't think he sings on it, actually. I wish he'd sung, because there is something about hearing McCartney singing a lead and Ringo in the background. What's that song?
Beautiful Nights.
Beautiful Night. Terrible video. Great. What album's that on? Is that Flame? That's not Flaming Pie, is it?
Flaming Pie.
It is Flaming Pie.
Yes. Sorry.
That's a really good song. And then the coda, when the Ringo, you really hear it's Ringo drumming and his voice comes in. That elevates it to, I think, a great song. Beautiful Night. The vocals, Ringo's backing vocals with a McCartney lead for me.
And it reminds me very much of Carry That Weight. It's got that sound.
Yeah.
Because Ringo's vocals are really prominent on that. So yeah. Oh, that's pure Beatles.
That's a great song, actually. Yeah. That's a really good song. The new McCartney album, Egypt Station, is Ringo on it? I don't think he is.
Yeah, I've played it once.
You're not a fan?
I need to listen to it again, I think.
I think it's a masterpiece.
Really?
I do, actually. Okay. I even like Fuck You, even though it's basically the best Coldplay song that Coldplay never wrote. It's a Coldplay song, and I hate Coldplay.
Yeah.
But it's a Coldplay song, and I like it. I think it's a really good album, actually. I think it's strong. I think it's poppy. I think it's funny. And it's a much better album than we deserve from a 76-year-old Paul McCartney in 2018. We don't deserve a record that good from
him. And a number one.
Number one. You know, I didn't like New. I thought half of New was good and half of New was a stinker. So I was expecting the same for this. I had no interest. I've never heard and will never hear Kisses on the Bottom. Couldn't care less. And this came out and I thought, well, okay. But I think it's a joy.
Yeah. And he's 76 and he's making an album that is, it's a contemporary album.
Yeah.
It's not trying to, I'm an old guy doing this.
You watch the, I watched some of the live broadcast the night it was launched. They did a live concert from, I think it was Grand Central Station in New York.
Right. Yeah.
He did a live concert. And you know what? He looks great. He's rocking the white shirt and braces look. He sounds like a 76-year-old man. I'm fine with that. I don't mind old man McCartney voice, as my friend Ryan describes it. I don't mind that. It's what we got. You know, Blackbird sounded okay, fine.
Yeah.
I mean, he's doing that thing of he will not change the key. He still performs it in the original key. And you think, okay, I respect Fair that enough. He's doing that. But there was a really weird bit where he said, right, okay, the next song's about bullying, you know. Who here's been bullied? You two girls, okay, come up on the stage, right, okay. So tell us about, it's a really awkward, try and watch it. Really awkward. So he gets these two young girls up, it's got to be like 20, 22. Yeah. And they're like, oh, we're on stage with Paul McCartney. They're just giggling. So you girls, you've been bullied, tell us about it, what happened?
What?
So he shoves a microphone in one girl's face and she tells us about being bullied. Shoves the microphone in the other girl's face and says, you know, well, I hate bullies. Tell you what were their names? Name them. So now he's naming and shaming people. And they go, right, the name. Yeah, she was called Jennifer. Okay, Jennifer, if you're watching this, don't bully my friends again. Otherwise, you know, there's going to be trouble. Everybody, let's boo Jennifer. So basically, then he does a song. I can't remember what the new song is. Who cares what people say? I can't remember what it's called. So basically, he's got these people up to condemn bullying. But then he is using his platform to bully this Jennifer and the other bully. You know, one of the biggest rock stars in the world is bullying this poor bully. He's probably, I'm going, oh my God, he's bullying me.
I'd love it at the end. She said, oh no, actually, it wasn't Jennifer, it was Jane. Sorry.
Oh, it's a great clip. It's a great clip, you know.
Oh, because he's just signed with Capitol Records, haven't they? And the promo for the Egypt Station has been unprecedented.
Yeah.
I've never seen marketing campaign.
Yeah,
like
good.
It.
I mean, he's done everything. He didn't do my radio show. They said no to us, but we tried. But he did the Soda Jerker podcast where it was great. I would have liked to have heard their tongues a little bit out of his backside, you know.
To be fair, if you were in a room with Paul McCartney, I would struggle.
I would. I did enjoy it, actually. That's a little bit unfair of me. I retract that. I did enjoy it. I thought that was great. I mean, I can't watch the Corden thing because I don't like Corden.
Oh, really? I don't... I've got no feelings about James Corden whatsoever. And just watch, ignore
I'm such
him.
A bitter old man.
No, you're not. No, the stuff I've seen written about James Corden, and I don't know enough about him to hate him.
I think I'm jealous. How's he got a career like that?
Yeah, how can he be with Paul? But then you can say that I'm jealous of Linda. You know, she's married to him. Why not me?
But funny, you know, I love the fact that Paul doesn't blanch from his past. He knows the joke. He'll play the gag, you know, and he'll nod to the past and he'll accept it. So we're going off on a huge tangent, but it was good to see so much excitement around a new Paul McCartney album.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday, here, making each day of the year, changing my life with a wave of her hand. Nobody can deny that there's something.
So we've done, Yesterday,
which I think is a superior version with the brass band.
And it segues into Here, There and Everywhere and Wanderlust.
It's the original recording of Here, There and Everywhere is perfect.
Absolutely, yeah.
For me, two of the greatest Beatles songs, Here, There and Everywhere and For No One. He does For No One as well, doesn't he? Those songs for me have always been just magical, absolutely magical. And he muffs them right up here. You know, it's all right. It's like a kind of nice lounge version. It's nice to hear him sing it with that slightly older voice. But it's nothing new here, those two tracks.
No. I mean, it's perfection, isn't it? Yeah. And you think if he can't do it, everybody else don't bother.
No, it's pointless. Wanderlust, I think, this is how I heard the song Wanderlust. Never heard it before. Yeah. And it's stunning. Top 10 McCartney songs of all time. Possibly top five, could nudge it up there.
Really?
I think this is a better version. It's not that different, really. Is it? I don't think it's that different. But it's that beautiful kind of, I don't know if it's actually literally a falsetto, but that wonderful high-pitched McCartney and that melody. Oh, it's stunning, man.
Yeah, he's good at those.
He's good at those.
Ballroom dancing. One thing I noticed watching this, as I had to last night.
I'm so sorry, Chris. That's all right. I do apologise.
It was a labour of love. Labour of like. It's, Gary Shale from Metal Mickey.
Oh.
He's the dancer. You know, the ruffians come in and
ruin everything. Yeah, of course.
I was watching it. And obviously Spider and Quadrophenia, but more famously for me,
And of course, Mickey's. Who directed Metal Mickey?
Mickey
Dolenz. You see, it all links up.
Whoa.
It all links up
like a spiral in it. Wow,
isn't it? Yeah.
It's all going.
I think that's a great song, Ballroom Dancing. I think it's a great version. I think the video is superb, and you can see that. I don't know if it ever got played on there. I'm sure it didn't, but you can't. You talk about the MTV H1 thing. You could see that video on VH1. You know, it's a great pop video, I think.
Yeah, it was a sort of strange thing going around at that time, because you had the Kinks doing Come Dancing as well, weren't they?
Come Dancing, yeah, that would have been the same era. Yeah, I wonder if it's that. How old would McCartney have been then? 40?
Yeah.
If
same as Ray Davis, about the same.
Yeah, guess, so. that kind of middle age, probably maybe a little bit too early for a midlife crisis, but that looking back nostalgically on things that were happening when they were like 10, 11, 12, you know, that yeah. kind of, when the ballroom dancing was a huge thing. I mean, the Come Dancing by the Kinks is based on his sister who died, Davis's sister who died, had a heart attack.
Yeah.
The local Palais, or, you know, whatever it was. But she's the one that bought him his first guitar as well.
And then we go into Silly Love Songs, and again, the video for this, which you mentioned before. One thing I will say about this new version, I can't really tell the difference, but it's got a fabulous key change, which he doesn't do on the original.
It's got the good key change. I can tell the difference. I thought this version was awful. In fact, I skipped it today when I was listening to it. Not one of my favourite songs anyway, but it's a song that I can listen to and I can dig. But this I skipped. I just thought it was pointless. It was lousy. Mm. It was weird. And yeah, that weird video. Embarrassing. Actually, you know, one of the lot of the film is cringy, but that moment was embarrassing. I just thought, what the f*** are you doing, man? And the fact that it's featured so prominently on the cover, you've got him on the back.
There he is.
And on the inner sleeve. Hang on, I'm getting this out. Microphone going down. Getting out. I mean, look at that. All of them, the whole band in their white sort of suits with the trousers
cyborgs.
Are too... short and the wigs and
the Dickie Davis wigs.
Oh, it's flipping awful, man. Shame on you, McCartney. I'm going to say it. That's the worst thing you've ever done in your career is the remake of Silly Love Songs and the video.
And don't forget, in the video, you've got Jeffrey Daniel from Shalimar doing his body pop.
That, to me, that video is him totally misunderstanding what MTV is. It's him going, you know that MTV, I think I know how it works. It's this. And then you watch it go, nah, Dad, you ain't got a clue. That's not what MTV is. You should be on a yacht, you know, leaning off the edge of a yacht or walking along a beach.
Yeah.
Not that. That's embarrassing.
No.
Got quite angry there. I do apologise.
You did,
yeah.
We have hit a nerve.
Bit of passion.
Yeah. In the film as well, it's, Jeffrey Daniels' laser shoes is the notes I had. There's one bit where he's doing something, he dances and he says, electricity pours from his laser shoes.
That's one of those moments where you would have a stronger director. Did George Martin produce the album?
Yeah.
Didn't he? A stronger director, or even, you know, Sir George, could have said, nah, you don't need this. Why don't you write us a new song? You know, or pick something more illustrious, you know, and do a more radical remake of a song from your incredible back catalogue.
On the CD version, not on the vinyl version, So Bad, which he originally did on Pipes of Peace.
Is that when he does that in the session with Dave Edmonds?
No, it's Eric Stewart.
Eric Stewart.
Yeah.
Isn't Dave Edmonds in it?
Dave Edmonds, he's in it.
Yeah. Right, yeah. I like that. Again, but again, that was from an album from like 2 years before.
That's right, yeah. So,
which is odd. An odd thing you would think... All right, well, let's mine some obscure Beatles stuff, because there was, in 84, there were still a lot of Beatles albums tracks that perhaps the general public weren't so familiar with or had forgotten. You know, something off the White Album or something. Or, you know, let's go back to 70, 71, 72. Let's pick something off, you know, let's pick something off Wildlife. Or, you know, let's get something that is perhaps didn't work the first time round and revamp it.
Yeah.
Also from 2 years ago.
I wonder if it was because he was working with Michael Jackson then a lot.
Yeah.
So they had Say, Say, Say and The Man and Girl Is Mine, all this sort of thing. And it is a very Michael Jackson-y sounding song. And I wonder if he was thinking, hey, look, everybody, I'm kind of doing this kind
I'm
of stuff
I'm a young,
as well.
I can keep up with the young, cool, black kind of soul pop singers of the day. Maybe that was it. Maybe it was he was feeling old. You know, yeah. because he was old, 40, oh, pop
ancient.
Music. You know, when you look at the clips, I mean, look, us now, way past that, but yeah. you look at the clips, there's that famous clip of the Beatles being interviewed really early on. Well, you know, if it goes on for another 2 or 3 years, I'll be happy, you know. And some, he, at that point, was pretty much in the uncharted territory for a pop star, a 40-year-old pop star still having hits.
Yeah.
No one had done that before, you know. So maybe he was... Mm. feeling the breath of the younger generation on his neck, thinking, well, I've got to try and keep up with this. Well, yeah. of course, he shouldn't have tried to keep up with it. He should have kept ploughing his own furrow yeah. because he's Paul McCartney, you know.
Yeah. yeah.
So maybe that was that. I don't know.
No Values, another new song, a very Back to the Egg sort of sound, very guitar-y, not great, but again, watching the film,
God, there's a really scene... You really resent me, don't you, Chris?
No.
You resent me?
It's How Much I Love You.
But God bless you for that. Thank you.
I went through that for you. There's, again, I don't know if you remember this, but there's a guy... who looks exactly like Giant Haystacks.
I have to say, I deliberately did not watch the film again. I saw it 5 years ago, and that is recent enough for me. I've seen it half a dozen times,
yeah.
but I did not watch it again. You're right, is that not Giant Haystacks?
I don't know. I was watching it, and I was thinking, that is Giant Haystacks. If it is, they've dubbed on his voice, and I think they got Brian Glover to dub it on, because it's, all right, what's it all about, me old throat?
That's a great line. I... thought that was Giant Haystacks.
I think it must be. So you've got Ralph Richardson.
And there's not... Here's the thing. There's not enough of those odd cameos to make it a thing. You want to... What we're talking... Geez, this is where my life has come. I'm spending my Saturday afternoon analysing what Paul McCartney could have done to make Give My Regards to Broad Street a decent movie. Oh, man.
Where
so
else
sad.
Would you be?
But he could have piled it with... And there are a few, but just crammed in every 80s television and sports star in there and made it a, oh, look, there's such a,
yeah.
Like, you should have had Big Daddy in there.
Yeah.
You've got Giant Haystacks, you have Big Daddy in there as well.
I'll tell you who's in it, Dr. Leg from EastEnders.
Yeah, Dr. Leg is in it.
He's
in there. Yeah, Dr. Leg
he's
pops up.
So he's answered your question.
Yeah.
Paul knew.
Yes. It was...
And, the fade out of this, very reminiscent of Comfortably Numb by Pink Floyd.
Okay.
And it just goes on. I don't know. It's not one he'll be remembered for, I don't think it is.
No. And maybe, well, does that explain the preponderance of covers then? Maybe he was having a block.
Mm.
Maybe he was having a block. Because the next album release was Press to Play, which is... You know, is patchy to be generous.
Yeah.
So had he recorded Pipes of Peace before this?
Yes.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he'd used up all of his good songs he had, because Pipes of Peace is a great album,
yeah.
a really solid album. off the back of Tug of War, another really solid album. Maybe he just, you know, he was stretching himself too thin, and that possibly explains the covers and the slightly weak handful of new songs. Although... Bad Boy's a new song, isn't it? I think
it is,
and that's great.
Yeah,
that's great. It's throwaway, silly, Paul McCartney rock and roll bit of nonsense, but fun. I enjoyed that a lot.
So yeah, so then you've got the No More Lonely Nights ballad reprise, which is basically just an intro to.
Bow, 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 bow.
Echo.
By the way, if you watch the South Bank show special, you see him playing.
Yes.
Bow, 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 with George Martin looking on, and you can see George Martin thinking. What the fuck am I doing? What am I doing? I produce Sgt. Pepper and Revolver. What am I doing here? Bow, 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 bow.
Let's do it one more time.
But it's great seeing McCartney in the studio in that era,
yeah.
I think. It's charming to watch, and the joy that he's getting from going, well, you know, discovered if you plug this in and turn that you get, bow, bow, bow,
yeah.
bow, bow.
Yeah. let's do a whole film about it.
Let's do a whole film.
About Mangler.
Based on these three notes.
Based on these three notes.
day breaks, your mind aches. You find that all the words of kindness linger on when she no longer needs you. She wakes up, she makes up, she takes her time and doesn't feel she has to hurry. She no longer needs
you. So again, yeah, For No One, which we, again,
pointless.
Another Revolver one, pointless. Ringo, one thing going back to Ringo, I love the plot device they've given for him where he's chatting up Barbara Bach.
Oh, yeah, that's charming, really, isn't it?
Why don't you come back to mine and listen to some of my drum solos?
That's charming. I think that was the last movie that she did as well. Yeah, that's charming. Ringo looks so cool. The thick beard, the thick hair, the couldn't give a shit attitude, you know. It's around that time that Ringo Starr told my dad to piss off.
Really?
Mid-80s, yeah. My dad was working for BBC. He was in the props department, but for some reason he was on a... There was... he's told me he's dead now, so I can't double-check it with him. But there was some kind of an audience with, or a This Is Your Life, or something being filmed, and Ringo Starr was one of the guests. And my dad had to go up to Ringo and say, Ringo, at BBC, would you mind just coming and doing an interview? No, I don't want to do an interview. Peace and love, peace and love.
It's going to be tossed.
Yeah. And my dad said, look, we can give you £400 for a two-minute interview. And Ringo Starr said, why don't you piss off? I spend more than that on fags in a week. And walked off. And my dad, my reaction was to laugh at that. My dad was furious.
Really?
Would never hear Ringo's name spoken ever again. He hated Ringo. I hate that Ringo Starr. And I was thinking, man, come on, that's the coolest thing. Ringo Starr told you to pee off. You know, that's great. So,
because you've interviewed Ringo.
Met Ringo, yeah. The only Beatle I've met. I interviewed him when I was at Absolute. I got to go to Apple.
Did they sort of throw it out, right, does anybody here want to, or were you kind of first at the
queue?
No,
I'm really lucky. I'm friends with a PR woman called Sue Harris, who I know because she manages Sparks, another one of my favourite bands. And she introduced me to Sparks, both their music and the men. When I speak to Sparks now, it's because of Sue, who's a great friend and a wonderful human being. And she looks after Ringo's PR in this country. And Ringo, for some reason, about 8 years ago, was getting a bit of flack.
He did a couple of things. He did one where he criticised Liverpool.
Might have been around then.
And there was also the fan stop sending me crap in the post.
It was that. And he was getting a load of flack for it. I've got too much to do. It was that, I think.
I'm warning you with peace and love.
There are a few stories about him that were really mean. And Sue got in touch and said, if I got you Ringo, would you be really nice to him? And you know, I need a couple of stories that are really good about
positive,
Ringo. And I went,
yeah.
Whoa, are you joking? Of course. And so she got me an interview with Ringo. I was always going to do a nice interview anyway. And so I'm sat in Apple, my producer and a cameraman. And so just being in Apple was a thrill.
Yeah.
It's around the back of Harrods somewhere. You know, Ringo walks in, and the great... I'd been on This Morning that morning, reviewing the papers, and Ringo walked in, and he pointed at me and went, I know you. I was watching you on the telly this morning.
Awesome.
Oh, wow. Man. Ringo Starr has acknowledged me, and he recognises me. And it was
genius.
20 minutes of me interviewing Ringo and blowing smoke up his ass, which
absolutely.
I would do at a moment's notice, and I brought my copy of the White Album knowing he was never going to sign it, and I got it out and I said, Ringo, would you sign this? He said, no, I can't, I'm not signing anything anymore. And I was thrilled.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, fine. He wouldn't shake my hand because he doesn't shake hands, so we elbowed
really?
Each other because he's an old man and he didn't want to catch a cold. And this is all the kind of stuff that people would use to be cynical, right? He was 70 or something. He was about to go on tour, and he didn't, you know, you can't go around. If you shake hands with everyone, you're going to catch something, right?
Yeah.
Fine. I loved the eccentricity. Oh, he was a joy. He was just a Beatle, man, you know. And he could have told me to piss off, and I'd have been, okay,
Ringo.
I love you, Ringo. I love you, man. It was a joy, and it was one of my proudest moments, and it was a thrill. And
oh, that's lovely.
But one of my friends is friends with Paul. Friends. My friend Mackenzie Crook, you know, is in The Office and Pirates of the Caribbean, is in a Paul McCartney video. The mandolini one. Everybody's going to dance tonight.
Dance tonight.
And for years afterwards, we'd get Christmas cards from Paul McCartney.
Whoa.
We'd get invited out to dinner. You know, Mackenzie, I'm in, it's Macca. I'm in town. If I was going out for dinner. You know, doesn't get it now, apparently, but wow. I've got to say it.
It's a nice phone call to get.
Mackenzie will never listen to this. I was as jealous as hell. I was sick with jealousy. I'm not proud of it.
All it would have taken is, can I bring Ian along?
Exactly. Some kind of friend,
too much to ask.
Screw you, crook.
Eleanor Rigby, back to Ringo. There's a dream sequence at the end of Eleanor Rigby.
Functional, the remake of Eleanor Rigby. Functional.
Functional, yeah.
Functional. That whole dream sequence is too long. It's one of those things you think, okay, this is what they did to make it a 90-minute movie instead of a 50-minute TV special. It's pointless. It's embarrassing. The sideburns is weird. I don't get the symbolism of the dream sequence. Isn't it Jack the Ripper in it? Or is that something?
It is. Yeah, it's the Alan Klein character,
right,
who appears in a horse and carriage, and he's with his evil henchmen. And suddenly down the water, you know, the waterfall they go, and they crash. Again, Rob Manuel and I were talking about the video for No More Lonely Nights.
Yeah.
They use the scene where Ringo, Linda and Barbara go in the boat and they go over the waterfall and crash.
Yeah.
And in the note, have a look at the video, because it's different to the film version. Then there's a load of fireworks superimposed behind Paul singing it. It looks like Paul's celebrating
their death. Finally,
no more lonely nights.
That tedious the whole instrumental's not on the vinyl.
No,
is it?
They cut a lot of it off.
Thank God for that, because it is on the Spotify. It is on the CD, I think. And it's pointless.
Long and Winding Road. Why do it like that?
You could listen to that and go, I'm going to say that's 1984. Because it just sounds, the sax solo, the lifting of the Spectre style. Not one of my favourite Beatles songs anyway. I think it's a little bit, in any of its versions, the naked version, the Let It Be, it's a bit too schmaltzy. It's a bit too Paul by numbers. I think knowing it comes from Let It Be, you put that side by side with Let It Be, and there's no comparison. You know, Let It Be is light years ahead, and it feels like a sub Let It Be to me. No, thanks.
Gentlemen, I'm sure you'd like to be the first to know. We got the tapes.
And we end with No More Lonely Nights play out version.
It goes into the dance version, which
that you can picture Jeffrey Daniels' electric laser shoes as this kicks in.
I quite dig that version. It's really 80s. It's probably the most 80s thing he's ever done. I quite like it.
Yeah.
I quite like it. And in the sense of a soundtrack, it fits, you know, a soundtrack album. You kick off with the ballad, you end with the... That bit's great. Thank you for reminding me of that. I quite like it. It's cheesy. It's fine. That's his closing theme to a 1980s romp. I like that.
Yeah.
Of course, on the CD version, there's what's it called, Princess.
Goodnight Princess.
Goodnight Princess, which is I like. It's in that. Well, that's the end of the race. Finish now. So to send you away, we've got this, and it's this kind of sort of 40s jazzy thing, which I think is a lovely bit of music. I wonder if there were ever lyrics to that.
He recently did one around that time. Oh, I'll have to. I won't use this bit. He did one for his,
look at you cutting out all of the bits that make you look like you don't know what you're talking about. Shame on you,
no, because I can't be bothered to look it up. It was one he did. His dad wrote.
Oh, and he released it. He did
walking,
it as a
Walking in the Park with Eloise.
And didn't he press it up as a single for his dad or something?
Yeah.
And or am I confusing that with the song he did for Linda?
So it's a similar kind of thing.
Yeah, I suspect there were lyrics to that. It feels too realised for it just to be an instrumental. So I think it's a lovely little bit of music.
So, Ian, thank you so much for your time. Again,
whoa, where are we going?
What?
I'm only just getting warmed up. I've got another 2 hours on this.
Okay.
Turkey, for goodness sake. Let's make this a three-part special.
Yeah.
Just very quickly, in summary, I'm glad this exists. It's a shame it was a flop, because I would love to have seen a series of Paul and Ringo movies, kind of in the style of, you know, the Bob Hope, Bing Crosby road. I'd have loved to have seen that.
Oh, yes.
And it's well worth, dear listener, going on YouTube, watching the South Bank Show special. There's also the premiere of Give My Regards to Broad Street. And I tell you why I like watching the premiere, because we know what's coming next. The universal thumbs down. Roger Ebert gave it one star, you know, and said it's the closest you can get to a non-movie ever. And apparently McCartney met Roger Ebert and said, got to ask, what do you think of the movie? And Roger Ebert told him, and I think McCartney told him to F off and walked away.
Really?
I think so, yeah. Mm. But go and watch the premiere, because everyone is full of excitement and hope, and it's a big old thing, and the news are there filming it, and we know what's coming next. The world go laughing, basically. Yeah. It's a weird thing, but it's a movie that I will watch again, and it's an album that I think I think it's a lot more interesting, the album, to Beatles fans than you know, several other McCartney albums. You know, Off the Ground, we mentioned Wildlife. You know, I think because of the Beatles covers and can they be covers if they're your songs? But because of those, I think it's a really interesting album. And I think in terms of Paul's career, I think it's pivotal. I think it's up until that point we'd had Beatles Paul, Wings Paul, huge international pop star 80s Paul, and then for the next 15 years you've got a man adrift, and I think this album and this movie is what sets him adrift.
Ian Lee, thank you so much.
Hey,
it's been an absolute joy.
It's been a thrill. I'm in esteemed company being on this, so thank you for asking me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And if you want to hear more, please go to our website iamtheeggpod.com or follow us on Twitter @iamtheeggpod. Thanks for listening, and thanks, Ian.
Any complaints as well about any controversial anti-Beatles statements, please send them to I Am The Egg Pod, not me. Nothing to do with me whatsoever.
Leave him alone. It's my fault.
Well, that's it. Thank you for joining us. We hope you've had as much pleasure listening as we've had making it for you.
Bloody great lads, come on, lay it on them.